Hello everybody and welcome back to Mind Clickers. I'm a sport and exercise scientist and performance coach for the Renegades from Melbourne, Australia, with a passion for esports performance, counselling, science, and how we can holistically improve our athletes' quality of life. I am also a scientific author for G-Science, helping to provide and share educational content catered towards esports health and performance. I created Mind Clickers to provide an insight into the psychological and performance demands of elite level gaming. This includes getting an insight from professional players, coaches, shoutcasters, organization owners, and esports researchers about their respective domains. In the following episode, I had the wonderful experience of sitting down with Amy Palmer, who is the president of the Misfits Agency, where esports and brands unite. Amy is also the founder and CEO of Power Women TV and ex-chief content officer for FaZe. In the following episode, Amy and I chat about the importance of marketing yourself as a player, the branching of traditional sports, the importance of developing rapport within your Twitch community, judging partnerships, and the upbringing and future of Gen Z. This episode was absolutely jam-packed with content that is crucial to listen to for those upcoming and eager to push into esports. Thank you very much, and this has been a fantastic episode, so I hope you enjoy. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Season 2, Episode 20 of Mind Clickers, where it's time to click both heads in 2021. I'm joined today by Amy Palmer, who is the president of the Misfits Agency. Very nice you've joined me today, and thank you for taking time out of your day.
Thanks for having me.
No worries. Fantastic. I guess what we'll do is kick it off with Mind Clickers is we usually provide a little bit of background about yourself and I guess how you got into esports as well. So I'd love to chat about and hear about it.
Sure. So I was in media for a long time, many years, mostly in New York and Los Angeles. I did everything from producing a bunch of shows at MTV, kind of in the heyday, like TRL, working with like Britney Spears,
wow.
The Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, you know, J-Lo and Christina Aguilera. So I had a really amazing education in youth programming. From there, I worked for Atlantic Records for a little while, so I got kind of that music background where I understood how the music industry was working and where that was going. Mm-hmm. And then I pivoted and I was on air. I created my own show that was on NBC in New York. Mm-hmm. So I kind of became a media entrepreneur. So I was on camera. I also created programming and put other people on my show. So that's really where I became someone who understood how to create value for media. From there, I became an entertainment reporter where I was on various networks, nationally and globally, talking about entertainment news. And then I pivoted again and I created a female empowerment platform called Power Women TV, where I really delved into the art of digital media, how to monetize it, how to create it, how to syndicate it. We had, you know, some success with that where we partnered with Time Inc., which then my content was syndicated into the billions on a global scale. And then I got a call from a friend who was and still is a CEO of FaZe Clan. Yep. And he said, we really need you to come out and help us with content. So I went out to Los Angeles for a few months, kind of get a lay of the land of this crazy world of esports, which I had never been a part of before. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, this is the future. Right? Like I see what's going on here, the content creation, the incredible engine that FaZe Clan had built. So how do we create content around that engine, syndicate it out, and more importantly, monetize it? So I have to say FaZe Clan was really my education into the esports world. So I spent about a year there where we had various successes with content, including, and I'm sure you're aware of this podcast, Mom's Basement.
Right. Yep.
So co-created Mom's Basement. Our first guest was Ninja. And of course, you know, we put that right up on YouTube and within 24 hours, millions of views and a list of who's who in Hollywood and esports who wanted to be on that show.
Right.
So we understood the formula of how to create content for this generation. And then I was put in touch with Misfits. I looked at what they needed and I thought, you know what, would be a really good strategy is to create an agency within an esports organization that would fuse production and the sales team And I would kind of be that in-between person where I would create content for high-level brands, ideate for them, social media strategy, syndication strategy, amplification strategy. Right. So we are, you know, off to the races with incredible brands right now. SoFi, we're doing a bunch of programming for, as well as Hasbro Nerf. So it's been exciting so far, and we're just getting started.
Fantastic. Well, definitely a well-versed background within the field and a lot of experience to help, I guess, from, you know, from the music industry that you can help to, you know, kind of expand and take that knowledge within esports. How do you think, you know, the music industry differs from the esports industry in terms of content creation, in terms of individuals marketing themselves, and in terms of, you know, being able to display what they're good at?
You're asking about differentiating between music and esports?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a completely different thing, right? So what's happening within the esports community is they are their own content creators. Mm-hmm. And as you know, players are being signed just on their content creation skills alone. Whereas the music industry, the artists were really looking for the music industry to promote them, to build them, to create content around them.
Right.
Whereas each esports, successful esports figure is building themselves. And I think that this generation and this space is very entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
They understand I've got to create content. I have to build my social growth. I have to be, you know, on Twitch 24/7. I have to be engaging with my fans. So they're their own marketing team. And then they're signed. Then they can go into, you know, a Misfits or a FaZe Clan in order to build out even more. And that's one of the things that we do with Misfits Agency is we will be signing and have signed up and coming players and influencers in order to grow them organically.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess, you know, the biggest comparison there is, of course, you know, as an esports player, trying to market yourself, trying to build your own brand and trying to establish that kind of sense that you want to develop within the community. Do you think that's a lot of pressure for someone to go through, you know, on top of trying to perform consistently, on top of trying to, you know, perform within a dynamic event in terms of, you know, trying to, for the next event, for the next big LAN, trying to manage that balance?
Yeah. And so here's kind of the crossroads, right? You can be the best player and you'll get signed. You will get signed because skills are needed. They want people who are going to be on the team to win. But to be a superstar, you have to do everything.
Everything. And
that's the pressure. You know, there's not a lot of ninjas out there. Mm-hmm. And ninja it's a very specific blueprint of someone who's brand friendly, someone who's out there, and someone who understood the game. Mm-hmm. And so I think when aspiring esports players are looking to build their brand, they take notes from someone like Ninja, Mr. Beast, and, you know, that type of influencer and player.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, how important is it to, I guess, create your own route and not really take that blueprint, not really try and replicate that template that's already, you know, obviously worked so well within this industry? You know, you can look towards Ninja, you can look towards different high level content creators and see what they're doing and try and replicate that for success. But then how important is it to try and find your own groove and your own niche within that scene as well?
It's so important. And I think it's such a good question because I think, you know, the blueprint is there. So everyone thinks, well, if I do this and I do this and I do this, well, then I'm going to get signed and I'm going to be a superstar and have millions of dollars of endorsements. It's really the people who are different and it's the people who stick out. The personality is the most important in terms of kind of making your own path. However, the social strategy, the content strategies is important as well. So you're a creator, you're creative, and you're have to be a great player. So it's a tremendous amount of pressure. But I think that's across all industry right now, right? If you're a musician, you could be the most talented musician, but if you don't have a social media presence, someone who maybe less amount of that talent but understands how to get millions of followers is more attractive to the industry because followers, that equals currency.
For sure. So in that regard, would it be better for someone who I guess competing at the semi-professional level, but already has a well-versed, you know, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok following versus someone who's really at that professional level, but has zero social media presence? Would the semi-professional have more engagement and more success potentially?
Yes. Yes, it's absolutely true because brands want to work with, as you know, people with reach, which equals currency, which equals power, which equals superstardom. And that's how our industry and all industries in media are developing. And that's the pressure. And that's why, you know, you could be on the street, and I'm sure you see it too, young kids doing TikTok dances, right? Like they already know, the 9-year-old girl or boy gets it. Like, I got to do the TikTok dance because I need followers. So it will morph into something else, as we know, but this is where we're at right now.
Yeah, for sure. And I think what's really interesting to me is looking back maybe, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, where this whole influence of content creation wasn't really as, I guess, as strong as it is nowadays, right? Back then, it was primarily the players themselves and their skills, which was driving that incentive to be hired onto a team, which was creating that animosity within the scene to really stick out and be this kind of beast within the scene. But I guess, you know, fast forward to nowadays where, you know, we have so many different platforms like Twitch where someone can really easily be so accessible. The power of marketing yourself is really right there. And, you know, it feels like if you're not doing it, then you're really missing out.
Yeah, and you have to do it. And, you know, to me, it's like, it's part of your job now. Whereas years ago, and you mentioned 5 or 6 years ago, it had its space, right? The influencer was kind of seen like, okay, maybe it's style or maybe it's food and this person might get some sort of brand deal, but now it's a multi-billion dollar industry. And that is how the brand industry is run. And also as teams, you want to bring in revenue. So when you sign someone, you think, is this person amazing? Yes. What kind of revenue will they bring with brand endorsements? You see it with the NFL. You see specific players who are superstars because they have millions of followers on Instagram, and then they've got like some sort of, you know, Doritos behind them or whatever. And it's because of that following. So it's not just about that they're a great player. It's that they have 5 million followers on Instagram.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's a really good point that you raise as well, that the mixture of combining traditional sports with esports, because, you know, obviously in regards to traditional sports, we have football teams and NFL teams, NRL teams. And the interesting thing about those teams is on a team, you might have 15, 20, 25 players. So there's a lot more disparity and reach within the team and the organization as a whole. But then you look to a specific League of Legends team or Valorant team or Counter-Strike team, and you've got 5 players. So you need to really try and make that reach worthwhile, because you have a lot less reach on the traditional sports team, right?
It's true. And I mean, as you know, there's so much crossover now, right? So now we have athletes reaching out to us. I want to be part of your content. I want to be part of your team. And so then that becomes a thing. So it's not even enough for these guys to play in the NFL or anything else. They want to be part of the esports ecosystem because they understand the power of that engine. That engine is the future. And to me, that engine is going to fuel many, many industries. And to me, it's just the beginning, because I think a lot of industries don't understand the power of that engine yet.
Definitely. It makes me think about, because I think early on MindClickers, I had a chat with a Brisbane Bullets, so a basketball player who's also doing content creation in esports, because he saw that value of, I guess, attracting a different audience, right? Because on one stage, there was this audience that really loved him as a basketball player, but they couldn't really build that connection and that relationship. So being able to go on Twitch and really have that audience that you can build a community around was really strong and really powerful. So do you think that, I guess, we're going to see a lot more traditional sports athletes starting to reach into esports, starting to combine and try and drive for that audience and that reach?
Without a doubt. I've met with and worked with top level in that way, and they all want in. They all say, we'll be there, let us know. Yeah. So, like I said, we're just getting started with our content, but it's high-level content, high-level talent. And the truth is this talent will do it for nothing, because they want access to the audience, because they want to be relevant.
For sure. And I guess on the flip side of that, what if we look at in regards to, I guess, the traditional sports organization, you know, in regards to some of these organizations and sports teams starting to branch off and have their own esports team, how important is that, do you think?
It's super important, because it gives the esports world credibility. Right. So if you have some of the biggest owners of sports teams for the past 50 years saying, we've got to create our own esports team, then it gives credibility to the actual organizations as a whole. Right. Because they're saying, we see the future. We know this is where sports is going. We need to be involved. So I think it's it's beyond important. And also, you know, many of them are coming in as investors. They want in on some level, and we're seeing that across the board.
For sure. And do you think there's problems maybe from critics who think, well, no, traditional sports, this, it's always been this way. We don't need this. Why are we doing this? And you know, really trying to work out that mindset.
There's always people who rail against change, right? Mm-hmm. So I have a saying, pivot or die. And it's right. True. It's like,
yep.
And we've seen it time and time again, and it's happening faster and faster now, right? If you're mm-hmm. not pivoting into the next thing, then your brand, your org, your company will not survive, because the rate that we see media and trends coming and going is quicker than we've ever seen it before in any time in history. And it's just because of the platforms that are fueling the technology in order for us to connect.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, that connection is really strong and really powerful. And if you're able to establish such a strong connection from the get-go, then it can really lead that transformation for change. And I think that's powerful in producing change and developing future relationships as well.
Oh, absolutely. And I think through the platforms, you know, like Twitch, mm-hmm. our players, our influencers are able to connect to their audience in real time, right? Mm-hmm. You can post something, but and yes, that's a connection, but Twitch is a game changer. That to me is the next broadcasting platform because it is in real time. And then audiences will understand the authenticity of the player and the personality. And Gen Z is great at knowing when it's not authentic. And I think like platforms like Twitch really have a say in that, because it's like this, it's, you can't fake it, right?
Yeah. You know the person. Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, what comes to mind is the greatest kind of example of that is, I guess, you know, throughout this whole COVID process, a lot of traditional sports were paused and they were stopped. And for example, we had a lot of Formula One drivers who couldn't drive. So they took to sim racing on Twitch, and they were able to build and connect that relationship and establish, you know, a wider audience, a wider branch, and I guess get more traditional sports viewers and audiences into esports, because they were like, oh, hang on, this is pretty interesting. Let's you know, test the waters and see how this goes. And I think that's really strong as well.
It's super strong, and it's interesting, right? Like, we're all going to be living as an avatar, like I keep saying, like living in a virtual world, and it's true. So I think that it has to be multi-pronged, right? Like, so you can live you know, reality where you're doing your sport, but then there's also this virtual aspect of it, and being present and creating content on all platforms is incredibly important for every sports org and also player. Mm-hmm. You want to have longevity. I always say, like, you've got a window, right? If you're talent, and it doesn't matter if you're an athlete or you're an influencer, you do have a window in which to jump off your brand. And you have to be extremely strategic in that window for longevity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And I think being able to, you know, take that longevity and extend it further is going to be really strong for a lot of people as well. Because if they're able to have more reach over a long period of time and not really be in the scene for a short amount of time, and I guess that really leads to the point that a lot of a lot of teams can switch out players willy nilly, right? Someone could be on a team for 2-3 weeks, a month, a couple of months, and then all of a sudden they're getting swapped out. And I think that's the problem, potentially one of the problems with any sports at the moment, is that kind of longevity with some of the players. And, you know, that what that comes down to, I guess, is regarding skills or performance from that perspective. But then I guess, is someone more likely who, I guess, has already established such a great following, such a great relationship with their audiences, is that going to mean that, you know, an organization is going to look at them and think, you know, we don't want to drop this player as much because we're getting really good exposure through them, do you think?
Yeah, it's true. It's kind of, you know, revenue generating properties are very important. Mm-hmm. I think that it's naive to think that that's not the case. Also, again, you can't be a terrible player and terrible human being and be kept on a team, right? That's not going to work, but it does help you in the long run. And I think that that's something that, and I'm sure in your work, you know, you talk to players and aspiring players about this all the time. Yep. It's not just how many hours you log in front of your console. It's not. Mm-hmm. What are you creating that's ancillary to your brand?
Mm-hmm, for sure. And I think a lot of players, you know, speaking to a lot of players, you know, that really brings to mind that, you know, a lot of players just really aren't keen to step out of their comfort zone and explore Instagram, explore a TikTok, for example, explore, you know, highlighting themselves and showing themselves on Twitch. And, you know, how do we start to get out of that mindset of, you know, that growth and exploration is key and crucial?
Well, unfortunately, what will happen is they'll be passed over for opportunities, positions in the space, and then they'll have to make a decision. Do I want to go full in or do I not? And I think it's, I mean, I talk to players all the time who are teenagers, and I always say to them, get on Instagram, get on TikTok. And a lot of them are reluctant to do so because they say, well, I'm awesome. I got this at Fortnite and I'm logging 18 hours a day in front of my screen. And I say to them, where's your camera? You know, and I say, oh, just get an editing app, get a ring light, and that's all you need. So I think they'll understand as they mature and time goes on. It's just that because every single kid I know wants to do this, there's a tremendous amount of talent and there's a tremendous amount of the talent pool. And so I think you have to stick out, and the younger that you can hone these skills, the better it is. But it's not for everybody, right?
Right. And do you think that there's not really an age barrier, but there's a point where it's like you've missed the train, do you think?
That's so hard to answer because the industry is so young in terms of like the space that we're at.
Yeah.
Listen, I've seen kids signed as young as 12, 13 to this space. And do I think that there's 40-year-old gamers that are amazing and potentially could bring in millions of dollars for an org? Yeah. We just don't know. It's so early. And I think it will evolve as we go. And let's not forget, it's a physical game. And you know this as much as I do. But if the physicality isn't as prominent as something in football or soccer or tennis, right? So the age range is a lot wider.
Yeah, for sure, definitely. And I think that age range, and I think the biggest impact is that physicality, where, you know, whether we're not physical athletes, but we are cognitive athletes. And I think that, you know, when you start to really get in that mindset, especially for these young players, and they can really start to take on that mindset that, yes, I am an athlete, you know, whether I'm not running around, I'm not jumping, I'm not sprinting, diving, whatever, but I'm performing a game, you know, so many cognitive elements go into performing at the elite level. And it's crucial to really start that mindset process early, I think.
I think so too. And mental health is super important, you know, which I know that you focus on. That's so important because sitting in front of a screen for 17, 18 hours a day, what does that do to your social skills, your development, your mind-body connection? And I think that that's something that's going to be more and more prevalent as this industry grows. So that's one. And also for the world and for people outside of the space to understand, it is a sport. It's about endurance, consistency, intellectual sharpness, because we know, I mean, you know as well how important that is in order to be an elite athlete in this space.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So I guess, is there a point, do you think, where organizations are really going to start to look at, well, you know, hang on, we're really focused on these players? Because I guess within the Oceania scene, Australia, New Zealand, there isn't many people like myself, a performance coach, to really help these guys, especially the youth athletes, to really help them with all these difficulties of, I guess, building themselves and then dealing with their external performance and then dealing with their mental mindset as well. So do you think that a position like that within, I guess, the industry within North America or Europe is going to be a lot more prominent?
Yes, we actually just brought on a woman named Carolyn Rubenstein, who I think you should have on this podcast.
Alrighty.
She is the chief wellness officer within the team. So her job is to do exactly what you're saying, which is to make sure that the players are okay, taking care of themselves, and it's a very, very big job. And she can, I mean, definitely have her on this. I think she could speak to a lot of what she's doing right now. And it's super important, especially because I believe it will trickle down to the people who follow them, because they'll see, oh, this is how they're taking care of themselves. So these are the conversations that they're having, so that kids who want to be them understand it's part of it. It's not just about, you know, what we see on the on social media platforms.
Yeah, for sure. I guess really developing that scene because, you know, when we look at traditional sports, probably esports is closest, similarity barrier. The fact is that, you know, within traditional sports, we have so many external allied health professionals helping to cater towards the team, right? We have physiotherapists, we have sleep scientists, we have sleep psychologists, sports psychologists, a lot of people invested within the team to help the individual athletes in and out of the scene. So I think it's crucial. And, you know, there are, I guess I've had quite a few chats on MyClickers here with a couple of sports psychologists. And, you know, I think the scene's just developing and it's in its infancy stage. And I guess within the next few years, we're going to see it becoming the normative.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I think that this is like we're in the beginning stages of this industry, which I think is exciting, right? Because I'd like to say it's kind of like the Wild West right now for all of us in whatever sector that we're focusing on. So yep. I absolutely agree with you. And I think as time goes on and these become bigger and bigger orgs and more prominent in many spaces, you're going to see that for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess one thing we were chatting about previously is, I guess, you know, trying to keep up with that consistency of, you know, highlighting yourself and exposing yourself and really building out your social profile. At what point do you think where it becomes, oh, I've got to get this like, oh, I only got 2 likes on this post, I only got 100 likes on this post, there really starts to build that mental stigma in regarding, I'm not good enough, can I keep doing this? And how can we, I guess, change that?
It's so hard because I think it's in our DNA to be liked, just okay?
Yeah.
When you put yourself out there and you get 2 likes or 5 likes or whatever, you feel bad. And it doesn't matter who you are. You could be a 6-year-old kid to a 50-year-old person. Like, it just is the reality. And I think that it's a lot of pressure on people and that can make them quit before they even get started. So I think what's actually really important is to have a dialogue around it and for there to be a constant reminder from people who have made it that when I started, I had 10 likes. I just kept going. It didn't matter. It's about that fortitude and it's about that mindset of I have blinders on. It doesn't matter what the world says. I believe in myself. And that's just really what any successful person has ever done because nobody has started out successful, right? If you're building from the ground up, there's years and years and years of work and nothing. So if you're building a brand, when I talk to people who are building a brand and I'm helping them, I say to them, this is a commitment and this is years. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And that's for anyone building anything.
For sure. I definitely agree with you. And I think the biggest question that pertains for some of these individuals looking forward is, you know, what if I stuck to it? What if I developed my consistency to make videos, to produce content, to build an audience, to engage within a community? And, you know, I think regret is probably a big thing that many people have. And I guess, you know, just that kind of what if mindset. And I think that's really, really powerful.
I do too. And there'll probably be some content around that we'll develop just to help people in the space because it's really, really crucial, really crucial for them to understand that you got to start somewhere.
For sure. Definitely. Now, I guess, you know, when looking towards those professionals who are really entering the scene or, you know, quite new to the scene, I guess there's going to be a lot of opportunities coming to some of these plays in regards to investment opportunities or in regards to partnerships. You know, what should a player be looking for in regards to a partnership? Because within traditional sports, a lot of, I guess, athletes who I've previously worked with in rugby tend to take on a partnership that really resembles themselves, holds true to themselves, you know, has value within themselves, and it's not really, you know, some random associated brand. So do you think that, I guess, for these up-and-coming people who are, you know, really new to the scene and really engaging in the scene, it's crucial to take every opportunity that comes in regards to partnerships, or it's crucial to pick, you know, mix and match?
I think it's really important from the get-go to be choosy about who you work with. I think that if you say yes to every single thing, then it dilutes your brand from the get-go. And you don't want to be that person. You also don't want to come across like you're a star when you're starting, but I think it's important for you to understand your values, who you are, what you stand for. And if that brand identifies with your pillars of who you believe to be a brand and an emerging player, then I think you can work with them, but you can't say yes to everything.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I think, you know, talking with a couple of previous professional players here on MindClickers, the most common similarity has been, you know, obviously without dropping any names, but it's more so those kind of energy drinks really starting to get engaged with them and reaching out to them. And, you know, it's kind of put them in themselves in a position because obviously in regards to a partnership would be fantastic, right? Because it's more exposure within the scene, but then it's not something that really represents themselves as an individual because they're more so into health and fitness. So there's kind of that kind of crossover barrier about how do I approach it. So I think I definitely agree with you in regards to picking your own battles and, you know, making sure that you're partnering with something that really means a lot to you and, you know, is meaningful.
Right, because that also jumps off everything else. Because if a brand, as you grow, and these big brands look at what you've done before, it kind of changes what your brand is about. So you really cannot say yes to things you don't believe in or that say yes to everything.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess, what does that look like in regards to partnering someone? Is that more so a contract over a long period of time? Is that you have to meet X, Y, and Z criteria? What does that look like in regards to developing that relationship?
I mean, there's a lot of different ways that it works, but initially it's deliverables. You know, we want to get, you know, X amount of pieces of content. We want you to tweet about this. We want you to do a TikTok about that, Instagram. And then if it's successful, it could be a longer term contract, but they do kind of try it out in the beginning. If you're an established personality, you're looking at a lot of money and it's long term. But from the for starting out, it's like short deliverables so that they can measure your success around that brand.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess in many instances, the players have, you know, they have the key to driving that, right? They have the key to driving that revenue and I guess developing their own, creativity about how they approach these partnerships and the content they post and their ability to deliver that content successfully.
It's true because the brand is looking for the influencer to create their own content mostly. So that's why it's so important from the beginning to be content creator, to show what you can do, because that is all part of it. You're your own basically media agency, which is a lot of pressure on top of being a great player and doing
player. Yeah. Exactly. So do you think that it's important for a lot of players to have that mindset, or I guess to seek out external agencies to help to deal with that, so I can just focus on myself and my game and have someone else to take care of that creative side?
Right. Well, that's the Misfits agency. That's one of the things that we do. So, and it does help because, as you know, you want the player to focus on what they're best at. And I think when you try and spread yourself too thin, you just become not great at anything, right? So that's one of the things that we're doing at Misfits, to be able to provide those opportunities for our players, for our talent, so that they can focus on winning. But in the beginning, it is a lot of them doing it themselves. So the most successful people I've seen, either they have it innately within them to understand that on a business level, or they have family members or friends around them who can help them in that space.
For sure, definitely. And I guess a lot of those players that you engage with and have contact with, you know, what are some of the common traits that they all share? Is they all share that ability to drive themselves and to have that motivation towards developing that content?
Yes. I will say the most successful content creators that I've worked with have been super motivated from day one. They have blinders on. They don't care what, you know, what the comments say. They don't care if they have 5 likes, no retweets. They just keep going. And the more consistent they are, the more successful they are. So it really is about fortitude and a lot of what you work on, which is strength of mind and character, in order to just say, it doesn't matter what the world is saying to me, I believe in myself. That's where I see the most successful influencers and players that I'm working with.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely to have that kind of mindset that, you know, regardless of what happens, I guess, within present times, within the next few weeks, within the next few months, it's definitely a long-term game, and being able to portray that and develop that consistency is definitely a crucial thing. And I guess it's funny because previously, I had a chat with apparently Jack, who is a professional Rocket League player for Dignitas. And the biggest thing we chatted about at the end was marketability and how to divide yourself from the rest. And, you know, one thing he's really strong at is developing his YouTube game and, you know, ensuring that he's producing content, 2 videos a day, and really driving that scene to establish himself as one of the best Rocket League content creators. And that's massive, I feel like, especially for branding and really establishing himself within the scene, because, you know, if there's not many people within that scene, he's the one really reigning all the power. Well, that's fantastic.
That's it. It's just about if everyone's going left, you need to go right. Whatever that looks like, mm-hmm. you have to do something different. And especially the space is so crowded. It's so everyone's on YouTube. Everyone's an influencer. What, you know, every athlete is doing something. So you have to be super creative in the space.
Yeah.
You need to see someone like Will Smith, right? So Will Smith, one of the biggest stars in the world. He saw really early that he needed to go to these platforms in order to keep being relevant. So he's taking a page out of what we've seen Generation Z be doing since they were 10, 11 years old. They need to be on YouTube. They need to be on these platforms. And that's it, right? But not everybody has those skills. And that's why it's super important to say to people trying to get in the space, it's not just about your skills. It's about what on the side, and you have to develop them.
Yeah, for sure. Completely agree. So throughout, you've mentioned Gen Z quite a bit, and I think that we might have a few people listening, and I guess, you know, especially those youth players who don't really understand what that means and what those guys do. So if you're able to share some light more about what that means and what those guys do, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, so Gen Z is the audience that we really target, that we see in this space, right? So they're, you know, from like 11 years old up to about 23. So right now they're driving this space in a way that the other generations are piggybacking on, but they're not the innovators. They're not the ones who created the engine, like I like to say. The esports engine was created by Generation Z. So we look at them and we're our scientists, right, of Generation Z, and we say, how did they do this and what's the authenticity factor? So if anyone is aspiring to get into this world, just look at what your peers are doing, how they're doing it, and understand how the engine works. And when I say engine, it's the social media engine that they used in order to push themselves into brand deals, you know, sponsorship deals, team, becoming part of a team, and know how to use that for yourself. Because a lot of kids that I talk to get it. They understand, but they don't really get it, right? What is the science behind it? And that's one of the things at the agency that we really try to delve deep into. The data, understanding how things are engaged, what works, what doesn't. And I think that if you understand the science of the engine, you'll be in a better place. And it's also, and Gen Z is very nimble. They understand the platforms. They understand they have to pivot on the platforms. That if you're creating content for TikTok, it's very different than what you're creating for YouTube. And while you and I may talk about that very easily, some people don't understand it. So if you want to get into this space, understand what each platform needs and expects from you in order to build your brand. And the consistency aspect is super important.
Yeah, for sure. I completely agree. And, you know, previously when I had a player on, we briefly chatted about the difference between, I guess, building your brand on YouTube versus building that exposure on TikTok. And he mentioned that, you know, whilst he's been developing himself on YouTube for quite a long time, you know, he was on TikTok for probably a couple of weeks and he already gained such a wide following, so many likes, the views came in. Do you think that TikTok as a platform is just so much easier to grow on just because, I guess, how much exposure it has within Gen Z nowadays?
Yes, TikTok is completely the place to build your brand the fastest. And we see that across the board. YouTube is kind of like a slow roll. And you can use TikTok to promote your YouTube. Absolutely. You can grow very easily on TikTok. That will change as it becomes more and more predominant in the space and throughout the social ecosystem. But someone who's watching this, who is aspiring to build their brand, I would say use TikTok as the cornerstone of building it.
Mm, For sure, definitely. There's a lot of, previously, even today, I had a chat with a couple of players who are, I guess, ambivalent about doing TikTok because it's like there's been an association between, for a particular niche and they don't want to affiliate themselves, with the dancers and that kind of stuff. But there's definitely different sides of TikTok. And I guess the esports side of TikTok can really help someone grow.
It's without a doubt. And you don't have to do the dances to be on TikTok. There's a lot of things you can do on TikTok. And I know we've all seen what goes on there, but do not discount the power of that platform. That's where every brand is. Every brand wants to know how many followers you have. And like you said about the person that you interviewed, how quickly their brand grew. And what happens is if you can grow quickly on TikTok, that's going to help your YouTube numbers. That's going to help your Instagram numbers because they will find you on TikTok and then find you on the other platforms.
Yeah, for sure. One thing I've actually been quite interested about, I guess, as we're talking about TikTok is, quite a while ago, there was that kind of implementation that TikTok might be banned. So what sort of influence do you think that would happen in terms of content creation, in terms of reach and audiences and relationships?
You mean if it was banned?
Yeah, I mean, if it was banned completely.
So I have great faith in the ecosystem of social media and also these big tech companies. I just believe that something very similar would be created and would migrate to whatever that platform is. I mean, we've seen it before, when Instagram created stories and really did kill Snapchat for a bit, although Snapchat is incredibly also very powerful for Generation Z in content. You see, they migrate to the platform that's easiest to access and also to create content. So, and listen, TikTok is now, something else will be the thing in 2 years. So that's what I mean about pivot and understanding the science of content and platforms.
Yeah, really understanding the trends and what's new and jumping on board that as soon as possible.
That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm. And I think, whilst we're talking about that kind of, looking at the trends, it really reminds me of just, building the perfect algorithm and really starting to understand, the analytics between what works, what doesn't, and then really finding your own boat in regards to, driving that ship and, really setting your own sail towards that path that works.
Right. I mean, now we also have to become data scientists, content creators.
Yeah.
It's a very entrepreneurial 360 look at how to build a brand. And I think that if you can use technology and the tools that these platforms provide you with, you get data right away, which is amazing because back in the day, you kind of just relied on TV ratings and some people who said, oh, you're a star. Now it's really the audience decides if you're a star. The audience decides if you're the thing. And I think that's changed the power of building a brand into the content creators' hands and also the audience's.
And do you think that's the way it should be?
100%. I mean, someone who has been talent, I've been talent, and I've had to walk into rooms and convince people. But that's why I started my own thing, right?
Right.
I did my own thing because I thought, which is kind of like precursor to this world, I'm going to do my own thing. I'm going to show you what I can do. I'm going to own my own content because I want to be in control of it. So that's why I think I understand this audience, because I did the same thing just in a different time in a different space. It's up to you. Limsa, when I started, I was terrible, right? If you look back at some of my old shows, no one was going to put me on TV, but I just kept doing it. And then all of a sudden I have Emmys, but that's years. So when I talk to talent, I'm not just somebody who's just talking to talk. I really understand. And I understand how crushing it can be to your self-esteem. I understand comments. I understand the silo in which you have to live in order to be successful and know I might not be great right now, but I will get there.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Definitely. And I think that really drives an interesting narrative surrounding how to deal with toxicity, how to deal with comments and how to really take that and not let that get the better of yourself. So, in regards to obviously a lot of professional players, there's a lot of disparity, especially within the top level with between organizations, for example, on Twitter, where I guess if one team lost and the other organization might make a post, and you know, that might get to a lot of players. You know, how do you think it's best to deal with that kind of negativity and really just stay in your lane and just keep driving?
So I think you have to educate yourself on what toxicity is. Mm-hmm. The great thing about Instagram and social media is there are a ton of therapists that post great things and great information. And I think you have to use social media as a way to help you with your mental health. Mm-hmm. It's amazing what's out there, right? So that's one. But you have to identify what toxicity is. You have to have boundaries of what you allow into your life personally.
Right.
Personally. You have to understand what abuse is, because right, that can happen on mm-hmm. different levels and affect you as a player. And this goes across any athlete, anyone who's performing on any level. If you want to reach that elite status, you have to be diligent about your life. You have to be diligent mm-hmm. about who you let in, what you allow into your brain, which you know. So I think it's about educating yourself, surrounding yourself with people like yourself who can say, no, this is toxic. You need mm-hmm. at all costs to put up the wall and not allow it in. And it doesn't happen overnight. It's an education. Mm-hmm. It's top because you can mm-hmm. have all the content creation in the world and you could be the best player in the world. But if you're not right in your head,
yep.
And we've seen that all for years, right? We've seen that through decades of the top players on all levels mm-hmm. who need to take a break or have burnout or, you know, things happen. And it's the same thing. Yep. This, and I think even more because we're concentrated all online and then mm-hmm. all of these comments and things can happen.
For sure. Definitely. And I guess what stems from that is, you know, when does get to a point where it's okay to disconnect, it's okay to take a step back, it's okay to just switch off, and it's okay to just think, you know, yes, our goal's done here, or no, I didn't perform today as well as I would have liked, I let my team down, or, you know, X, Y, and Z, and it's okay to just switch off and really just, you know, be yourself.
Yeah, and I think it's really, really important just for people in general to do that, and especially mm-hmm. players, because they need to go outside, they need to feel sunlight, they need to have yep. a life outside of this. And I think that, you know, like at Misfits, what we're doing with Carolyn, that's why she's there, right? So she's reminding our players, go live your life, go out in nature. And I think that, you know, people like you and Carolyn will be more and more needed as the orgs grow, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree. I think the education is just crucial. And I think, you know, I definitely agree. I think as we spoke earlier, once one organization is doing something, everyone else is going to look to what they're doing successfully, and they're going to be like, hey, let's start to think about this. Let's just test the waters. If it doesn't work, no stress. We've tried it, but at least we gave it a shot, right? And I think testing that and giving it a shot and is what's necessary and what's essential. And I think that once people really start to see that and start to value the health, not only physically but mentally for their players, then, you know, the performance outcomes will probably just come by themselves.
Yeah, and I think it's a responsibility to the org to give that service to their players as well. Mm-hmm. It benefits both player and organization.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess kind of overhead, do you think there should be a regulation surrounding that in regards to organizations should provide X, Y, and Z health?
I mean, yes, I definitely think that that should be across the board, and I do believe that will be across the board probably sooner than later. You know, our mental health is so important, and we see it talked about more and more, which is amazing as society pivots into a place of acceptance, especially for our young people. So absolutely, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. I think, as we start to turn off the engine and roll down the hill now towards, I guess, the end of the episode, you know, earlier you mentioned that you did some work with FaZe previously. So what did that involve, and how was your time working with FaZe?
So I was the chief content officer. So I was running a bi-coastal production team in New York and LA, and working with everyone in FaZe and everyone in Cloud Gang and creating content for them. So my first foray into this space was, hey, Amy, go up to the Faze house and go meet So I'm driving up to the Hollywood Hills to Justin Bieber's old house that they had rented.
And oh, wow.
I walk in and like the guys, are, I mean, you can imagine, right? Faze Banks,
yeah.
Like all these guys. And it was really, it was an education. And it was like walking into an alternative universe at the time, because I didn't know that this existed. You know, I was coming from traditional New York media, someone who was just, who was innovative, but I walked into something and I said, you know what? I've seen this before. I saw this with MTV. It's kind of the new version of MTV, but at a heightened level, because it was its own society. And then I saw, you know, four buses going by, people screaming their name. And I was like, these are the new rock stars. And even when we would go off the street and shoot with them, we had kids lining up outside of storefronts, freaking out. Faze Banks was there, all these people. And this was, you know, 2018.
Yeah.
So as we know, it's only grown. But I saw every single thing that you and I have discussed on this episode, I saw with Faze, from major success to how do we help the mindset, to professionalism, to org structure, to understanding how to create revenue. And that's why I say it's kind of the Wild West, but it showed me how powerful this engine is. And if you're able to harness it and create revenue opportunities off of it, then you're looking at something that absolutely no media company can copy. And I always say it's a youth engine created by youth, right? So it was created by 11-year-olds in their basements, and it's been going on ever since. So I don't care what media company tries to copy this engine, it's impossible. And the authenticity factor is unparalleled. So that's, I mean, I learned that at Faze and a lot of other stuff, but you know, it was a very interesting, enlightening, important experience that I had to be able to create the Misfits Agency and to further my work in the esports world.
Definitely.
Got a very,
and I think having that exposure towards such a, I guess, high level, you know, entry point was probably crucial to really enable you to understand, you know, what goes on at that top level. And I'm sure that, you know, that experience was, you know, has helped you to push forward towards the Misfits Agency in regards to what needs to happen and, I guess, building that engine. Because I think, you know, even if in the next 2, 3, 4 years, you know, that engine's still going to be alive and it's going to be growing bigger and bigger, right? And it's going to be a lot more optimized. And I think optimization is where we're going to see a lot more, you know, differentiation between different categories, how people do things, how organizations hold themselves. And it's going to be this whole network of, you know, what needs to happen and how that's going to happen is going to be essentially self-discovered. And I think that's crucial. I think it's definitely a very powerful engine. It's going to really interesting to see what happens within the next 5, 10 years.
This is true. This is where the future is, which I keep telling everybody. And they'll realize it soon.
Yeah, for sure. I guess as an entry note, I might put you on the spot now, Amy. I guess we have a lot of players listening. So, you know, what advice would you give for some of these players who are listening and really looking to just, you know, put the foot down and really just start to drive that content for themselves and, you know, try and expand and build those relationships within, you know, different communities?
So the good news is you have all of the materials you need in order to build your brand. You have it all. You can get the ring light. You have your phone. You have editing apps. You just have to get started, and you can't stop. Don't listen to anyone around you who says you can't make money being an esports star. We know that's not true. And here's also what I want to say is you might not be signed to a team, but if you understand all of the facets of esports, you can work within the esports industry. You can become part of these orgs and create content for other people. You could wind up, you know, running things in esports. That it's an industry that's emerging, exciting. And if you have the skills to understand how to work within it. You will be valuable no matter what. But if you're building your brand, just get started. Consistency is important. And live on these platforms, be involved in Twitch, be involved in engaging with your audience. The one thing I will say is that most of the top level talent, not just in esports, but just, you know, the people I've worked with in entertainment, they're humble. They work really hard. They engage with their fans. They try to respond to every comment that is posted. They're real. So don't try to be something you're not and just keep going. That's my
fantastic. I really appreciate that. I think that a lot of people are really going to take a lot away from that. And I think you summarized it very nicely. So I really appreciate that, Amy, in regards to, I guess, you know, sticking with it and being consistent, right? And just, you know, just experimenting with it and just giving it a shot. And I think as soon as you start to just acknowledge that change that needs to happen in regards to producing more content or looking towards what avenue I can go down, or, you know, even starting to create my own role within esports, because obviously as esports grows, new roles are going to be emerging. So why not carve my own way and create something new?
It's 100% true. And as the organizations grow within esports and traditional companies are trying to get into the space, you have now become an expert in that space, and companies will pay for your expertise. They'll want to understand how to work within it. So that's the value as well. And so if your parents or whoever are saying to you, you can't make money in esports, that is so not true. So just don't, literally just keep going and forge your own path.
For sure. Fantastic. For all our players and everyone listening, where can we find you on your socials in case we want to follow you and the stuff that you're creating and pushing out as well?
So we have an Instagram account with for the Misfits Agency, so you can follow us on Instagram there. And then I'm at Amy Palmer TV, so you can find me there. I'm also on Twitter at Amy Palmer.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. I'm sure that a lot of people will, you know, might send some followers your way and or even just start to look at the content you guys are creating and, you know, really start to use that as their own motivation towards creating some content within the industry as well. So, you know, I guess as a whole, I really appreciate you coming on today and spending, I guess, what best of the last hour just chatting about, I guess, the future of esports and, you know, all the different angles that are ascertained towards building your own self and building your own individual and what that looks like for the future above and beyond. So I really appreciate you coming on today.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of your day.
You too.